The Musician's Musician Podcast is brought to you by you. For real. We rely on listener donations to grow the show, so if you'd like to support what we do, you can set up a one-time or recurring donation. Just follow the link in the description. It's super easy, because PayPal. A huge thanks to those of you who have already given. We also want to ask if you could be so kind as to rate and subscribe to the program on whatever platform you use to listen to us. It helps the show reach more ears, and we love your feedback. Okay, on to the show.
Well, hey everyone, we just wanted to give you a heads up really quick that we're going to be trying something new on this episode. There is a little bit of a format change, but also it's still the same format and content that you would expect. Just a little bit of a segmentation of sections.
Yeah, just trying to clean up the flow a little bit here and then keep your eyes peeled for some additional content options as well.
So stay tuned. But until then, we have a, I think, a very cool episode on the one and only Chris Potter, except for he's not the only Chris Potter out there. So
yeah, this other Chris Potter is way cooler.
I don't know. You think so? I mean, I learned that there is a much more prominent Chris Potter who is an actor that I did not know who this guy was, but he's... He comes up first.
He apparently has done a lot of soaps.
Ah.
That's what I'm finding about him. Big soap man.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think soap operas are a little more popular than jazz, but who am I to say?
Who knows?
Not me. But we are talking about Chris Potter, the saxophone player, who is, I don't know, can we say a living legend? He's like a top cat.
Yeah, I he's one of few who I think hold that status. Just speaking personally, he's one of those names where it's always been like when I was getting really into jazz and was doing after school programs and stuff when I was a teenager and whatnot. His was a name that came up all the time of like, this guy is the ultimate modern jazz saxophonist because he's got all the goods and all the areas that you want him to have him in, aside from the fact that he's just like seriously a freak of a player. And we'll get into all of what we mean by all of those things and like what it means to have all the goods. That is admittedly a very subjective claim, but there's a reputational element to that too within like the broader jazz community and like why people do talk about him with it, well, it really in such a freakishly high regard. So that is why we're wanting to talk about him. We haven't done a lot of saxophone players and felt like he would be a really good place, not necessarily the best entry point for talking about jazz saxophone, but he is extremely relevant. So we wanted to talk about him for that reason.
Yeah, Chris Potter is kind of the guy that grew up listening to the different players and like thinking, oh man, this guy's a legend. I've got to learn how he's doing things. I've got to like emulate this player. And now he is that guy.
Yes.
He is, I believe he is the most studied jazz saxophone player. I think Downbeat said that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something you can actually measure. However, that is the word on the street. And
from our own experiences, too. I mean, anecdotally, yeah, that really, it does seem to be the case. Like beyond horn players, like all instrumentalists are very studious of his work. So
yeah, he thinks about things in a different way and has a different approach than a lot of people, or at least an amalgamation of approaches that are different than that become something that's different than what a lot of people usually do. But he's a really, really cool figure, and we're excited to talk about him.
Well, let's get into it.
So Chris Potter was born on January 1st, yes, New Year's Day, in 1971 in Chicago, Illinois. He moved to Columbia, South Carolina when he was 3 years old, and that's really where he lived until he moved to New York City for college.
Really, apparently, a hidden gem, from what I hear.
I would believe that.
Yeah.
I would believe that. Yeah, we were kind of looking at the Carolinas for a while.
As a place to live.
Yeah.
Awesome. You'll be closer to me.
Yeah, I mean... We moved to Dallas.
Yeah, it's too
instead.
Late.
Yeah. I don't know. Anything could happen. We could move again. Anyway, he was there, and from ages like 3 to 18, he started learning to play piano and guitar as a child, and then picked up alto sax when he was 10. And he really had a lot of encouragement, and people saw him progressing and really fostered the progress and development that he had going on. I mean, even at 12, he was not just playing like a normal 12-year-old would play. He won the International Association for Jazz Education Young Talent Award for saxophone, which is a huge mouthful. However, getting an international award when you're 12 years old, living in South Carolina, is kind of a big deal.
It's pretty wild. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people do talk about Chris Potter as being a prodigy, and you know, that wears off later on as he gets older and into a more mature space, but he really did hit the ground running and was exceptional from a young age.
Might be one of those few people who we talk about that's actually true. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. He's been pretty interesting to follow, even as a child. He started playing professionally at age 13, and that was kind of a big deal. I mean, you obviously would hope that someone at 13 is, you know, being taken care of, but he's out there playing and apparently was doing some, like, pretty serious stuff. Marion McPartland, who is a famous jazz pianist, heard Chris when he was 15 and said that he should be touring in a band like Woody Herman's band. And for those of you who don't know, Woody Herman was a jazz instrumentalist and educator, band leader that really, really focused on younger education and would hire younger sidemen to like play in the band and kind of give them their start. This is also really important to note that this is all back when jazz wasn't such an academic thing. It was not well accepted, if at all, in academia. And so it really had, I don't know, but it really had like more of that grassroots, like more of a trade sort of feel.
Yeah.
That, you know, like when you go back to Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker and like, you know, those guys that were just playing constantly and not going to school.
Yeah.
So. That's kind of the era that we are at the very end of, really, with Chris Potter. But he decided that finishing school was a priority, and he really got a lot of mentorship from some big local musicians. Johnny Helms and Terry Rosen were a couple of those people. When he was in high school, he was named America's top high school jazz instrumentalist by Downbeat Magazine, which is a big deal magazine. It is. I would say that's like the jazz magazine.
Yeah, and one of the longest standing ones as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And so with that, he also got a scholarship to the New School in New York City. So 1989, he graduates high school, goes to the New School. It was pretty unclear to me like how long he was actually in school, because he did a stint at the New School and then was at Manhattan School of Music. But like, really early on, he started playing with a guy named Red Rodney, who's a trumpet player, who's really an important trumpet player and particularly an important mentor and kind of stepping stone for Chris Potter. So he played in Rodney's band until Rodney's death in 1993, so for a couple of years. And this really got him into the scene. So he's playing like the Village Vanguard in front of people like Dizzy Gillespie and James Moody, like at 20 years old. So kind of a big deal. I kind of wonder if part of the connection to Red Rodney came from Johnny Helms, who used to play with Red Rodney.
Yeah.
Because Rodney met Chris when Chris was in high school. So
checks out.
Maybe that happened there. Yeah, that would make sense to me. But kind of at this point, he starts in some like long-standing like working relationships with some big, big names. Like he played with drummer Paul Motion from 1994 to 2009, bassist Dave Holland from 1999 to 2007, trumpeter Dave Douglas from 1998 to 2003, Steely Dan for like 10-ish years, like 95 to 2003, and spent some time in the Mingus Big Band, who some other big names have been in, like Conrad Herwig and Seamus Blake. So...
Well, it's worth mentioning too that he still plays with all these people, right? Like he went through like stints being a member of like their touring band, right? But like he still has regular performances and interactions with all of those people. I also want to point out too that he was like in his early mid 20s for all of this, which is not unheard of, but to be playing at that level that fast, like as quickly after he moved to New York, is kind of nuts.
Yeah, that's like, we talked about that a little bit with Gilad Hexelman.
Yeah,
in that episode.
Yeah,
but then like you look at guys like Charlie Parker who were actually like that age, you know, putting out those records.
Right.
I mean, kind of a different thing. However, like Chris Potter was just truly, truly exceptional.
Yeah.
So. He has been a band leader. He has been a sideman to a huge host of projects. And we'll get into kind of the, I guess, the philosophies and such a bit later. But there is a lot that happened, or like, there's a lot of development, I guess we'll say, in these projects and how he's approaching his own composition and band leading and even instrumentation. So, I think kind of before we move on though, one, I think important note, at least to me, is he had, Meniere's disease. And, that is, I couldn't tell you the specifics about that. However, it did lead to a loss of a lot of hearing in one of his ears. And, as a musician, that would be understandably,
kind of traumatic. Devastating. Yeah.
Yeah. So he battled through that and is still performing today. I mean, he's put out a lot of music and done, I don't know, it's safe to say most of his work since that happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah.
He's had a lot of good going for him, but he has had some tricky things he's had to deal with, but keeps coming out on top and keeps being exceptional.
Needless to say, just to talk about a couple of influential figures on him and like styles and whatnot to be thinking about. It's really not that surprising, but like just basically all of the giants of jazz saxophone were hugely influential on him. And he specifically cites in a number of interviews I've watched from him over the years and interviews I've read and different bios and whatnot, you know, obviously talks about like John Coltrane, talks about Sonny Rollins, talks about Bird, talks about Lester Young. I mean, these are all names that you're going to hear every jazz musician, regardless of the instrument, talk about as being extremely important. But I do just want to emphasize that a little bit though, like Train's influence, for example. While I don't know if I would say that Chris Potter sounds a lot like Train, there are a lot of elements of his playing that you very much hear the Coltrane-ness happening. If you're familiar with John Coltrane's work, and you're not familiar with Chris Potter's work, if you listen to Chris Potter, you're going to hear a lot of Train in his approach to improvisation. So that's kind of a point to be keeping in mind going forward with this, is that like he is very, very studied and constantly paying homage through composition and improvisation to the masters of this music. But that's also not to underplay the fact as has been very relevant in recent years. I guess recent is relative. I don't know.
Sure is.
Within his career, that like very groove oriented music has been very influential on him as well. Like you could, a lot of his projects are dealing with funk and R&B leaning type things, but still bringing in like the fusion virtuosity that is Chris Potter's approach, which again, we'll get more into that in just a second. But just from an influential standpoint, that's a really important thing to be thinking about in terms of his headspace. In addition, do be remembering, we've already mentioned it, but we've talked about the New York scene for being kind of the world capital of kind of where the greatest jazz is happening in the world. There's great jazz happening in many places. New York kind of remains the hub, and that is where he is still based. So like lots of his laboratory, I guess we could say, is still in New York, as it has been since his early 20s.
Yep. I do want to add just really quickly, Paul Desmond was a huge influence on him, and particularly the one
like who, an early influence, right?
Yeah. I would say like the earliest, maybe, because he was maybe like even that. Paul Desmond. Yeah. I want to make saxophone my instrument. And then Ornette Coleman, who he met up with one time and didn't have his horn, so he just chatted with him for like 3 hours, and he and Ornette said that the saxophone, well, he really thought about the saxophone as a voice. And that stuck with Chris quite a bit.
Mm.
So there's a lot of stuff going into it. And he says that he constantly thinks about how Bird would approach something, even outside of like straight ahead bebop.
Yeah.
You know? So it's always a part whether you really recognize it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and for that matter, as we get into talking about his philosophies very briefly, he's a great example of when we've mentioned before being rooted in the jazz tradition. Chris Potter is a great example of that, because he obviously is involved in other styles of music, but always with that like bebop swing backdrop. Like that is so entrenched in his playing, no matter what he's doing. It's just manifesting in modern ways and integrating into other sensibilities.
Is he perhaps an ideal example of that?
Maybe.
I don't know.
A paragon, maybe. Perhaps. I don't know.
Perhaps. I didn't say that. But maybe I did. Anyway, so talking about the philosophies of Chris Potter, I mean, there are a lot of things that go into it. And so I think that's something we just don't have enough time to dive into this as much as we would like to.
Yeah.
But first and foremost, the jazz masters really are like leading his philosophy and how he's approaching it. And he's trying to interpret things in that lens a lot of the time. Like you just said, even though he's pulling in these outside influences, that said, he gave a quote, "Music has always been a vehicle for me to investigate the things that are important about life. It's been a way of figuring out what it is I need to say. Plus, I keep learning new things about it." So, I mean, he's not thinking about music in terms of like, oh, this music is cool for the sake of music. Music is a vehicle for him. And it is, he talks about how music is not really important unless it's heard and digested and like, you know, allows you to feel something. Because that's like the notes that you're playing are really meaningless unless it's put into context and actually put into something that people can listen to.
Yeah. If I might also contribute another quote, this one's a little more lengthy, so bear with me, but there's a lot of really good information in here. So I do want to read the whole thing. So just, again, bear with me for a moment here. But he says, and this is again also kind of addressing the multi-stylistic, multifaceted, multi-vectored thing happening with Chris Potter, which is going to be a really great bridge, I promise. So there was a point where I felt like the context I had been using before wasn't quite working to express what I wanted or to move forward in some kind of way. My aesthetic as a saxophonist has always been based in Bird and Lester Young and Sonny Rollins and all the other greats on the instrument. What I've learned from them in terms of phrasing, sound, and approach to rhythm, I'll never outgrow. Okay, so that's kind of what we've been talking about, and then going on. However, music's a living thing. It has to keep moving. I've been touched by many forms of music, like funk, hip-hop, country, different folk musics, classical music, etc. And for me, not to allow these influences into my music would be unnecessarily self-limiting. The difficulty is incorporating these sounds in an organic, unforced way. It helps me to remember I want people to feel the music, even be able to dance to it, and not think of it as complicated or forbidding. If I can play something that has meaning for me, maybe I'll be able to communicate that meaning to other people, and the stylistic questions will answer themselves. So I feel like that lump That is everything that we've just been trying to say. You know, just go to the... horse's mouth? That's a Malifor. I'm mixing that up with something, but...
Straight from the horse's mouth.
Is that what it is?
I think so. We'll go with that.
That works. Is that like a Mr. Ed joke or something?
Couldn't say.
I don't even know what that means. Okay, so nevertheless, Chris Potter, he's a very complicated figure. But when you listen to him or you get to go see him, it's really not that complicated, and he's not trying to be. If you got nothing else, take it from there.
Yeah, he really is trying to make things fit in a way that is cool and expressive. And like there's a masterclass that he gave that I watched on YouTube, and he was talking about how, like, you know, all the technical things that we do as musicians are like important. However, like they just really don't have meaning unless we can put them into this thing that is communication, you know, that we're actually giving other people something. So there are a lot of different things that we can get from how he interacted with other players, though, too. And I think this gives a particularly good insight into to Chris's current state of things, too. But this is in relation to his time working with Paul Motion. So he said, Motion has really had a big effect on the way that I think about music. He approaches things from such an anti-analytical way. It's so different than so many of the other musicians that I've had a chance to work with. Motion more relies on his aesthetic sensibility and instinct. He's basically just trusting his gut, and he's so strong about it that he can make it work. And it takes a lot of courage to do that. So I think from a high-level perspective, this really does give a huge, huge lens into how Chris is approaching things right now. You know, I mean, he uses the saxophone, but he's the way he learns tunes, the way he thinks about them and interacts with the other players that he's with, he's not trying to math it out like many players do.
Yeah.
But he's really trying to say, how do I make this feel the way it needs to feel? And that shows in his lines and like how he plays throughout the chord changes and whatnot. So I think that's a really important quote that he gave.
Well, and salient for talking about what he actually sounds like. So let's get into that. Okay, so this is one of those times when it'd be really easy to digress into one of those, what does jazz mean, and, you know, trying to thread that one apart, which we keep dancing around that a little bit. And we're going to keep dancing around that one a little bit.
I think if
we can learn anything from the earlier pieces of what we've said so far, I think it's safe to say that at the very least, he's firmly rooted in the jazz tradition. But as to whether or not he's playing like jazz I would say is probably project depending. And I don't think that's a totally unfair take. So that said, Max, do you have some thoughts on how that, like, again, that said, how we can broach the conversation of instrumentation?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that, and it really does come down to that same concept. Like, it is project dependent. So one of the important things about Chris Potter's music is that he will start a project, he'll put a band together. So he'll write the music and get a band together. He does the majority of the writing, if not all of it. And he will work with that band, tour with that band, record with that band, all of those things. And then once he's done, it's over.
Mm.
Like, never to be performed again as of now, or at least as of the interview where he said that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess we'll see. We'll keep our eyes open because he's got some really, really rad stuff that he has done in the past, and I would love to see because I just frankly didn't get a chance to see it.
Yeah.
However, that is not available as of now. So when we look at each of these different projects, though, we see a lot of different things. We see very classic instrumentations. We see very weird instrumentations. Really, it goes back to that philosophy of exploring things and putting all these influences together in a way that is what he's after, right? So, for example, like his first album is bass drums, piano, trumpet, and sax. I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then we get into my personal favorite project, Underground, which has drums, guitar, sax, and then keyboards, or usually a Fender Rhodes.
Yeah.
So
bassless.
Yeah, bassless. And nothing against the bass, but he does a really cool thing with this. Kind of organ trio-y-ish, if we think back to the Jimmy Smith episode.
Yeah.
Kind of
similar idea. Yeah.
Hat tip to that, I guess. But then we've got also things like the Imaginary Cities album, where he's got like a huge instrumentation, like bass, guitar, drums, like vibraphone, like a string section. I mean, there's a lot. Big band, hard to tour with that. But then, I mean, it just goes project to project to project, and I think it's very cool. I mean, like, he'll even come back to instrumentations. This is very standard, like guitar, drums, keys, sax. But, like, you'll see that early in his catalog and late in his catalog. And that's – you do see and hear the development that's gone on with that, because there's definitely a very, very different take with this being a different project.
Yeah.
So – he is going to be playing primarily saxophone, which is a cop-out way of saying I couldn't tell you which saxophone he's always playing. Because he
generally
does play tenor.
Yeah, generally tenor. We can't say that. Yeah.
Yeah. He started on alto, though. I don't know when he moved to tenor, though.
I don't know.
Yeah. But soprano sax, like other various wind and woodwind instruments, like
bass clarinet, so, you'll hear sometimes, and
yeah, I mean, but then he's also like played around with like on the Circuits album, for example, with guitar, keys, different sampler sorts of elements.
Yeah,
so you're gonna hear a bunch of different things going on, and he hires very cool people that are going to contribute to the vision that he has for it, and it's going to sound different every time. Like, each project has its own signature, and it's worth checking out.
Well, and I think that's
I will say, though,
go ahead.
The people he has worked with on his albums are a who's who.
Yep.
It's outrageous. I was listening to one of them, and I was like, gosh, this piano player is just awesome. This is Brad Meldow.
Yeah.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's just players like that all the time.
Well, that's a recurring theme, right? Like, people of his stature are not working with slouches. You know, they are buddies with other of the greats, and that's who's playing on their albums, and he plays on their albums, right? Like he has a huge discography, huge credits list, maybe a better way to put it. Also a pretty sizable personal discography, but
yep.
Yeah. Just to mention a little bit to talk about his sound. This is one of those things where we are not horn players, so there are probably better words than I might use to talk about this, but he does have a very notably direct sound. I have been really struggling to think of like a word to describe his sound, but like the way that I always feel, and I do not mean this to say that it's like difficult to listen to, but it is like a head splitting sound. And the way what I mean by that is it's like there is so much intention and force, and I don't know. It's like every note that he plays was exactly what he intended to play. That there's like no fluffing around what that pitch is. So it just like cuts through your skull. And it's not to say he can't play the hell out of a ballad. It doesn't mean that he's like guns blazing all the time per se. But the sound is just very...
It's deliberate.
Yeah, it's very present. Very deliberate. I don't know if there are Coleman Hawkins is very famous for having like a little bit more of a laid back soft sound, and it's not to say that's a bad thing. I just wouldn't call Chris Potter, I wouldn't compare his sound to that. I would put it more on the like, you know, he's parting the Red Sea with his horn sort of a sound.
Yeah, like that kind of force. It's got weight to it. It's yeah. Not like that fuzzy, soft, like velvety sax sound.
Yeah.
It's got authority to it.
Yeah.
And that, I think of it really as him being super deliberate in his note choice and being very confident. Not to say that like that velvety sound isn't confident, but there is a directness like you're describing that really comes forward with it. And I think it lends itself really well to a lot of different styles. And he's really shown that in the variety of his catalog. However, his, the amount of variability you're going to find is very cool.
Yeah.
He is a very, versatile sax player and is on a ton of very, very different records.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind.
To have that sound kind of bring us a little bit into talking about rhythm, I feel like there are two things where if I'm listening to somebody else's album and I don't know who the personnel is and Chris Potter happens to be on the album, I can almost 100% of the time I can tell. And it's because of these two attributes. One being that like really direct, deliberate sound. It's like, it's a very, very, I don't know. It sounds like Chris Potter, but that in tandem with, he has a very syncopated approach. Like the man, whether he's playing something that is as like straight ahead and swinging as you can imagine, or he's doing some more freaky stuff. He has a very, very like, total and absolute control over the articulation. I don't know.
There it is.
but over like the articulation of his horn in as short and fast of a sort of like tonguing and repeating note sort of way as you might want it to be, or as legato and sweeping as you might want it to be. But like all of those elements are present in one way or another in tandem with that like super like sound. I don't know. And it doesn't matter like what the context is. You can like always hear that. And it's not to say that there's not variety in how that manifests. I think it's I guess all I'm trying to say here is I've listened to a lot of Chris Potter for a long time, and I can and that those are kind of the things that I always listen for and identify in his playing.
Said by a true fanboy.
Yeah. And just to speak briefly about harmony, it's always worth bringing this up briefly, even though we don't get super deep into this topic. One of my favorite things to do is to watch Chris Potter playing solo. Like, and there's a handful of really great videos of this on YouTube. If you just look up like Chris Potter masterclass or something like that, that'll usually pull them up. And a lot of people, because he is such a studied player, people will take these videos and then make other videos that'll have like transcriptions accompanying these videos, right, of his playing. And you don't need the transcription to hear that he's doing some like amazing things. But watching it with the transcription is also fun. And the only thing I want to say on that front is that he's a great example of the fact that you don't have to be constantly doing these like really ethereal, bizarre, theoretical harmonic concepts to sound like you're playing at a very advanced level. Because most of what he does is like bebop. Like looking at the lines, it's like
textbook.
It's like textbook bebop lines, you know. But but again, think about the directness of his sound and how much control he has over rhythmic manipulation. And it's like bringing all those elements together. It's just like it's just one of the most amazing things you'll hear.
Yeah, there was a masterclass that I was watching. He's talking about how he learns tunes, and he is a good enough piano player that at least he says that he's a piano player.
He is a great piano player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he learns tunes first on the piano. So he'll like get the chords out and like get the harmonic structure of like how the song goes. And then he like will start to play around with it, and he figures out how to play the song without having to just like have that backing. Like how he can run his lines and like weave through the song without like having the traditional like, okay, here's the end of a line, here is, so my phrase has to stop there, or that sort of thing. So he makes it more vocal, he makes it more fluid because of him understanding the harmonic structure and like mapping out his voice leading and like doing his homework on it, but then also feeling it out. So
yeah. Nice. Well, do you have any thoughts on who he's similar to? I mean, I definitely do.
just take it away, Parker.
Yeah, I'll just mention some other horn players, because it'd be really easy for us to go into other instrumentalists, but I just want to throw out a few horn players. There's a few people that are kind of maybe a little younger or around his age. We've talked about Donnie McCaslin before. I'd say that there are a lot of parallels between them. Joshua Redman, I think, is another great example, and also has a similar sort of sonic thing going on as Chris Potter. And I'm going to get like punched in the face by a horn player for saying that, but I have a reason for feeling that.
You can't leave your house
after
this.
Yeah. Also think about Seamus Blake, who he's had like a very, very similar career to Chris Potter, like playing with a lot of different types of people, but like still having his thing amidst all that. Anyway, I have a few other ones in mind, but those are kind of fresh on the top of my head for some reason. But anyway, what are some names that come to mind for you?
I mean, I think of Bird just all the time. Like, not just in like, and we've talked about this, but like not just how he's playing, but being very young and very exceptional. So
yeah,
I mean, I don't know that that's particularly helpful. However, that's who he's emulating.
I like it.
And it keeps coming back to that.
Yeah. Nice. Well, let's get into talking about how you can listen to him and how to get into him.
So when we're getting into Chris Potter's music, he is a jazz player, right? So you got to see him live. He still plays live. He is going to be on tour with whatever project he's currently working with. And it's going to be whatever style and shape that actually happens to be. So you really want to go see that. He does have a family, so he's perhaps not touring as much as he used to. However, he is still touring a lot. Yeah, he's like, staying home and like writing a ton sounds really attractive to me now, but I'm still touring a ton, so that's good for us. I mean, that's so great for him. But
well, and he goes to a lot of places too. Like, it's not unreasonable that you, wherever you live, like that within the next, 12 to 18 months, that like you could very feasibly see him.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And there's a decent amount of educational stuff that he works with. And you could very well, I don't know if you have an in-on with the university, but he does master classes, and a university might be a really good place to see him, just because they will then like put on a concert.
Yeah. So, yep.
Check out venues, but keep your eye out at the universities. That being said, he puts out a lot of music, and the stuff that he put out a while ago, you can't really see him do live anymore. So I think it's important that we don't forget the records, because the records are very cool.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on there. So that being said, check out the albums on your streaming service and or physical media of choice. So there are a ton of albums that he's played on that he's been the band leader, but also far more, exceptionally more albums that he has been a sideman on. He's been a very, very busy musician.
Yeah.
And that's with like people who have played in his bands. Also people like he played with Jim Hall. I mean, he's like, there's a ton of really cool stuff out there. And with a very, very wide variety that does not even classify as jazz. So,
yeah.
So check him out. I mean, the Wikipedia page gives a pretty good picture of that, and that's pretty easy to find.
But you are gonna encounter the actor website. Though.
Oh, you definitely are.
So do keep that in mind when you're searching for him.
It's gonna be Chris Potter, jazz saxophonist.
Yeah. Yep.
That is the one that you want.
Not Canadian soap star.
No. He almost looks like Trent Reznor in his photo.
Chris Potter?
Yeah. Yeah. On the Wikipedia picture. Oh, I don't know. I just keep seeing that.
That's funny.
Can't unsee it.
Anyway.
Anyway, his website is also
good resource.
Got a ton of stuff on there. So I don't know if it's the most up to date. I would not say that. However, there's a lot of good stuff on there. So check that out too. As far as picks go, there are a lot of very cool albums, and we would like to give you a couple recs.
Yes.
Parker, what you got?
Yeah, again, one of those things where like a lot of the albums that I really love are albums that he was on, but I'll keep it to just his albums as a leader, because there are many. So the two that I would pick, you mentioned Imaginary Cities earlier. I really love that album, and that album came out at a time in my life that it was like exactly what I needed to hear. So there's definitely some nostalgia tied to that one. But yeah, so I'm gonna say Imaginary Cities, and then I'll throw one out for the most recent album, Got the Keys to the Kingdom, Live at the Village Vanguard. It is killing, like just monster playing on all counts. Everybody just like plays their absolute ass off. So definitely check that one out. It is the most recent release. But anyway, what about you, Max?
Gosh, those are really good. Yeah, I'm gonna put my picks in as Moving In, which is like earlier on in his discography. And then, and it, which is like, he's got more of a straight ahead thing going on, but like great personnel, outstanding playing. And then Ultra Hang. I really liked Ultra Hang.
That's so good.
And with my current favorite instrumentation that, that he's done.
Nice.
That changes, but that's the favorite right now. So.
Yep. Well, we're obviously huge fans of the guy. Definitely kind of a fanboy sort of character for me. And I'm not even a saxophone player, but he has been one of the saxophone players that I have studied quite a bit. So easy enough to throw one out for Chris Potter. So here is our defense of Chris Potter. A mentor of mine once shared a video of a sax player with the caption that read something like, "In case you needed a reminder of what the saxophone sounds like, ellipses." Not surprisingly, the video was of Chris Potter. The 20th century is packed with masters of the instrument that have been and continue to be studied and imitated, whether for sonic production, vocabulary, dynamic contrast, pacing, or any other principle that someone may be wanting to improve on. You turn to those who are demonstrably the best. In modern times, Potter has proven to be one of the most absorbed players. He himself is an expert on all things sax greats, but he has some special sauce that hooks fans of instrumental and improvised music.
One way or another, you can get a good sense of a player by how peers might regard them. In the case of Chris, there is no shortage of peer admiration, like Dave Liebman referring to him as one of the best musicians around. You don't have to really go searching to hear jazzers refer to Chris in some similar fashion. But it isn't just jazzers. He's the player of choice for all sorts of artists. Suffice it to say, he has no issue getting work. He's the winner year after year in listeners' polls, critics' polls, and if there's a jazz festival of the who's who, you are all but guaranteed to see his name on the bill, unless he's too busy playing somewhere else.
Downbeat Magazine, one of the most read and longest-standing periodicals in the jazz world, has referred to Chris as one of the most studied and copied saxophonists on the planet. That's a monumental claim, but most students and pros alike don't seem to argue with it. He produces a fire-breathing, ruthless beam of sound that nevertheless pays constant homage to the masters of jazz saxophone. Accompanying this fierce sonic wall are lines that make total sense, but are crafted with such confidence and virtuosity so as to be jaw-dropping. When factoring in his additional love of many other musics, it makes a lot of sense that his playing would be so ceaselessly influential on up-and-comers who want to play their asses off, whether by natural proclivities to the horn and music more generally, or a tireless dedication to the craft. Likely both. Chris Potter is legitimately a living master.
So thanks for listening. Chris Potter is a living legend, is someone that players from every instrument and genre can just get tons out of. I mean, I don't think there's a an end to the influence that he continues to give.
Totally. So, well, and lots of my friends really outside of the jazz world are huge fans. It's like one of those, you know, one of those people. Yeah.
Yeah. So we hope you check him out. We hope you like really dig in and listen to a bunch of different things. Don't just listen to like one or two records. Listen to a couple of different projects because that's going to give you a better picture. And, you know, if you even if you like dive into his sideman work, like there's going to be something that's going to be really, really fun.
Yeah.
So we hope you love it and we hope you tell us what you like. Reach out to us. You can send us an email at themusiciansmusicianpodcast@gmail.com. You can hit us up on social media at TMMPod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can go to our website, www.tmmpod.com, where you can listen to episodes, read the defense of the artist, check out our picks, and even donate to the growth of the podcast. So we hope you love Chris Potter's music, and we hope you get a ton out of it. And until next time, thanks.